Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, October 31st, 2020. Bank robber charged after DNA fingerprint matches. A 57-year-old Midland man tied to bank robberies in Lubbock, Odessa, and Abilene has been federally charged, a press release from U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Texas, Aaron Neely Cox, detailed. Kenneth Hoyd Seaburn, 57, was arrested October 20th and charged with one count of bank robbery. Seaburn made his initial appearance before U.S. Magistrate Judge D. Gordon Bryant, Jr. Thursday morning. According to a criminal complaint, a man, who was later identified as Seaburn, entered Prosperity Bank in Odessa demanding money, the press release stated. The man was reportedly wearing a tie, white button-up pants, tennis shoes, sunglasses, rubber gloves, and a PPE mask. He passed a teller a note that read, "All dollar sign in bag. I am armed. No die packs. No bait. Dollar sign," then fled the scene with several thousand dollars. Odessa Police Department officers reportedly saw a man who matched the suspect's description that discarded rubber gloves and clothing on the roadway. Officers recovered the items and sent them to the Texas Department of Public Safety Crime Laboratory, which retrieved genetic material. The DPS crime lab then sent the recovered DNA sequence to the FBI, which ran it through its DNA indexing system, CODIS, and matched it to DNA on file for Seaburn, the press release stated. 26 days after the first robbery, a similar man reportedly entered the First Abilene Federal Credit Union, where he passed a similar note to the teller. He then reached into his shirt, grabbed what appeared to be a gun, pointed it at the teller, and threatened to kill if he didn't get money. Before fleeing the scene in a white Ford Explorer, he demanded the note back. 16 days after that, the same man entered People's Bank in Lubbock and passed a similar note to the teller there, the press release stated. He once again fled that scene in a similar white Ford Explorer and left the note behind. Forensic investigators from the Lubbock Police Department recovered fingerprints off the note, which matched fingerprints on file for Seaburn. Investigations also identified a white Ford Explorer registered in Seaburn's name. STEM Students Investigate Earthquakes by Ruth Campbell. Curious about the earthquakes felt over the past several months in the Permian Basin, about 80 sixth graders from the UTPB STEM Academy set out to investigate the causes and effects. Debbie Hudson, who teaches 6th and 7th grade math, said students spent the last 6 weeks on the project. On Fridays, we have a class period that's called PBL, Project-Based Learning. It's across curriculum, and it's across grade level, and so they spend 2 hours every Friday morning working on a project. This one we chose to do on earthquakes and what's causing them here in West Texas, Hudson said. The idea came up because there's been so much news about earthquakes, and we had so many right before school started that the kids were curious about it. That was one of the things they asked us when school started was, did you feel the earthquake? They said there was one. Did you feel it? Because I live in Parks Bell Ranch, there's lots of them out there, Hudson said. She said she was sitting in her living room at 4:30 one morning, and it felt like something hit her house, but it was an earthquake. A geologist from UTPB took the students to see the seismograph on campus, and they spent 2 hours there one Friday morning, she said. Thomas Leha and Bliley Latham and their virtual partner Audrey Lee discovered that there are a lot of earthquakes, but you don't always feel them. Sixth graders Peyton Grammett-Bauer, 12, and Jackson Griffin and Javier Gutierrez, both 11, studied how earthquakes affect Odessa. They found that fracking plays a part in earthquakes. 11-year-old Carson Thayer and 12-year-old Jacob Torres studied an earthquake in Shaanxi, China, that killed more than 830,000 people and injured hundreds more. "It was awful," Thayer said. "People didn't know what was going on. It was in 1556. The technology wasn't good then. There wasn't really technology at all. They probably thought it was going to be the end of the world. It's also very surprising that it only happened in a couple of seconds. How many people died in a couple of seconds is just disturbing. What we've also learned that's pretty surprising is that fracking, how we got able to get oil from the ground, it builds up gallons of polluted water and people don't know what to do. So thankfully, the scientists are trying to figure out a way to unpollute this water so it is safe, so it's not wasteful," Thayer said. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, November 1st, 2020. Section A. Sol Ross Library wins grant to support climate change programs. Alpine. Sol Ross State University's Brian Wildenthal Memorial Library has been selected as one of 25 U.S. libraries to participate in Resilient Communities, Libraries Respond to Climate Change, an initiative of the American Library Association, ALA, that will help libraries engage with their communities in programs and conversations on the climate crisis. "We are thrilled to be selected from a pool of more than 70 applicants to bring resilient communities to our region," Library Director Betsy Evans said. "We are eager to bring these fact-based educational programs and dialogues to our community in collaboration with our SRSU Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion and community partners like the Alpine Public Library. Resilient Communities programming will begin at the Sol Ross Library in November 2020, culminating in an Earth Day 2021 celebration next April. The library will use their $1,000 cash grant to host programs such as community film screenings and discussions. For more information and a calendar of upcoming library programs, visit https://library.solross.edu/sustainability. The Sol Ross Library will soon have a collection of climate change-related DVDs for checkout and will be designated as a climate resilient hub by the organization Communities Responding to Extreme Weather, CREW. Resilient Communities strives to raise awareness and provide accurate information about the climate change crisis to the public through libraries. The pilot project has been funded by a generous grant from Andrew and Carol Phelps, the parents of a public librarian and a library master's student. For more information, visit ala.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020. Education section. Getting Back in the Saddle Helps Build Resilience, by Tim Jones from Trinity School. I vividly remember the moment as a child growing up in West Texas when I anxiously hopped onto the back of a horse for the first time, only to be thrown off a few moments later. Watching me roll in the dirt with tears streaming down my face, my father did what his father had done for him. He made me saddle up again. As the adage goes, get back on that horse that bucked you. That moment, long tucked away in the memory center of my brain, came charging back last spring as we faced the inevitable challenges brought to life by managing school and COVID-19. Thankfully, my father's insistence on getting me back on that horse taught me a valuable lesson in resilience. As a result, during this time of unprecedented adversity, I had the skills to face each day as it presented itself. As a school administrator, however, what became increasingly clear was that not all students were able to meet these challenges. Many students in schools worldwide became frozen, unable to decide what to prioritize in their remote learning environment or how to navigate through new and unfamiliar modes of operation. The text we used to guide our health and wellness class, Health by B.E. Pruitt, John Allegrotte, and Deborah Prothro-Stith, defines resilience as the ability to recover or bounce back from extreme or prolonged stress. Stress, of course, can be disguised as many things. Still, there are generally four main types of stressors, according to Pruitt et al. Major life changes, catastrophes, everyday hassles, and managing conditions in our immediate surroundings. Unfortunately, since March, students and teachers alike have managed previously unthinkable challenges. As a result, stress levels have been reported at alarming rates in educational settings, and many students have found navigating school in remote, hybrid, and online formats debilitating. Best-selling author Julie Lithcott-Hames suggests in her book, How to Raise an Adult, that some students lack the ability to persevere through challenges because they have always had the rough spots in their lives smoothed out for them. As a result, many young people have not had to face real adversity until their late teens or early 20s. They have missed developmental opportunities to learn the brush it off, get back on the horse, try again, persevere through it mentality they should have cultivated in childhood. Lithcott-Hames likens resilience to a toolbox filled with tried and tested tools needed to face any job. One long-term blessing of the coronavirus may just be that no one could smooth out the rough spots this virus brought. As a result, as students are forced to face these challenges, they begin to build the tools and skills they need to normalize their everyday struggles. These tools and skills will serve them long after this virus has been defeated and chronicled in the history books. Had my father not insisted on me getting right back in the saddle that day, I may not have been armed with all the tools necessary to face the wide array of challenges inherent in school operations over the last 7 months. While life isn't always easy and predictable, we need to remember that in these trying times, our students are building their own personal toolbox for success. Tim Jones is head of upper school at Trinity School. Midland College Profiles by Travis Woodward. Instructor uses experience to teach others. When I was young, I thought about going into the oil field, Ray Salgado said. I was going to drop out of school. However, thankfully, I was counseled not to do that. The oil field business goes up and down, but as long as people are behind the wheel, auto collision repair and refinishing will never go out of style. So, for 20 years, Salgado worked in the auto paint and body field. He also enjoyed training and mentoring new employees. I love teaching, Salgado said. It comes naturally to me. Even at church, I'm always teaching people. In 2014, Salgado was in the process of changing jobs when he read in the newspaper that Midland College needed a part-time instructor for its paint and body instructional program. So he applied for the position and was hired. There's a big demand in the auto collision industry for technicians, he said. In the last few years, I started noticing that fewer technicians were available because they were retiring and there wasn't new talent to replace them. It made me realize that I could help fill that gap by teaching a new generation of technicians. Once hired at Midland College, Salgado immediately began working on an Associate of Applied Science degree in automotive technology. He credits his wife with pushing him to pursue a degree. My wife was my mentor, Salgado said. She encouraged me to go to the next class and helped me study. She helped me learn and never left my side. Born and raised in Monahans, Salgado has lived in Midland for 15 years and now considers himself a native Midlander. Salgado and his wife Elizabeth have 4 children and 2 grandchildren, and faith and family are important to him. For the past 2.5 years, Salgado has driven to McCamey every Sunday to preach at Iglesia Bautista El Buen Pastor. He said he will continue to do so until the church finds a full-time pastor. He has also been a deacon in his local church, Centro Familiar Cristiano, for 14 years. Auto collision repair and refinishing is a promising career, according to Sagrado. He said he is very fortunate to be able to combine teaching with his original profession. Highly qualified to teach in this field with his degree and over 90 hours of certifications, Salgado said continuing education is key to providing his students with the best learning experience. In the collision industry, there are opportunities to make excellent money, he said. I have friends that are making upward of $150,000 to $400,000 a year. They can work 8 to 5 with weekends off. That's a priority for me. I am big on family. The auto body technician must know automotive, auto body, and auto structure because in an accident, mechanical parts need to be fixed if they are damaged. I tell my students that the more they can do, the more money they will make, the more successful they will be. Pete Avalos, program chair of Energy, Auto, and Diesel Technologies at Midland College, said that Salgado has been a great addition to the college and the automotive program. Ray's many years of industry experience, along with the fact that he is an MC alum, has a positive impact on the students when he tells his story. He brings a great attitude that's contagious with students, and Ray goes above and beyond to make sure that students get as much individual training as possible. Ray's passion for teaching reflects how he makes every student his priority every semester. It is truly a pleasure to work with him. Salgado believes that students get as much out of the learning experience as they put in. I tell my students to have faith that they can learn something new, apply it in their lives, and then be successful. For Ray Salgado, answering the Midland College ad for a part-time faculty position has been a life-changing experience. I appreciate the opportunity to work for Midland College, he said. It has been an honor and an opportunity. I have met and worked with a lot of good people. It's a family. Travis Woodward is Director of Marketing and Communications for Midland College.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, October 24th, 2020. Saul Ross, Athletic Director, accepts position of Vice President of Finance and Operations. Alpine. Current Saul Ross Athletic Director Jim Goodman will shift duties after accepting the position of Vice President of Finance and Operations for the university. Goodman will continue to serve as Interim Athletic Director until a new hire is made for the position. While I know I will miss my day-to-day interaction with the coaches and athletic staff, I want to thank President Gallego for his confidence in naming me the VP for Finance and Operations for the university, Goodman said. I look forward to this new challenge with great anticipation. Goodman came to Saul Ross as its first full-time athletic director in May of 2020 after a career spent in high-level positions in San Antonio's professional sports world, including stints with the NBA Spurs, the Canadian Football League's Texans, and the Canadian Hockey League's Iguanas. Prior to joining Saul Ross, Goodman was Vice President of Development and Distribution at Quarter Moon Productions, Citywide Sports Network in San Antonio. He served from 2010 to 2017 as Senior Associate Athletic Director for Promotions, Public Relations, and Broadcasting for the University of Texas at San Antonio. In that capacity, he led UTSA's marketing, promotion, advertising, and broadcasting efforts as the Roadrunners were adding a Division I football program. We are lucky to have someone of Jim Goodman's caliber working with us, Saul Ross President Pete Gallego said. His business background and experience, combined with his determination and demeanor, make him a perfect fit for Saul Ross. We in the Lobo family are fortunate to have him. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, October 17th, 2020. Skaters Make Up for Lost Time with Wins by Michael Bauer. For Candace Escamilla and her students, they've had to play the waiting game this year to get the opportunity to compete at any skating competition. During a regular year, they'll go to at least 4 different meets. However, because of COVID-19, Escamilla and her skaters have been sidelined from competition for the majority of this year. Last week, they finally got that opportunity to take the ice in a tournament for the first time this year when Escamilla, along with 2 of her students, Amanda Acuna and Catherine Holcomb, took part in the Southwest 9 States Championships held last week from October 6th through 10th in Allen. Not only was it their first competition of the year, but all 3 made up for lost time, recording first place finishes in their respective levels. Escamilla finished first in the adult gold level, while Acuna placed first in the pre-free skate level. Holcomb was first in the freestyle 4 level. Well, they put in a lot of work, Escamilla said of Acuna and Holcomb. When you feel that it's all coming together at the right moment, there's no greater feeling in the world. For Escamilla, it wasn't just the first place finishes that stood out, but also being able to perform in front of an audience for once. With COVID, we have not been able to compete very often, so having the opportunity to compete in front of an audience in a big arena was really nice, Escamilla said. It was great to get to do that again. Escamilla teaches ice skating at the Music City Mall ice rink, where she is the general manager. She has skated for more than 30 years. I started ice skating when I was 8 years old, Escamilla said. I've been competing for a long time now. Both of these girls have been competing. Catherine, 11, has been competing for 6 years now. Amanda, 10, has been with us for a couple of years. She said the last competition she took her students to was last November. For Escamilla, what she loves the most about figure skating is that it combines great athleticism with artistry and musicality. Figure skating is the hardest sport that you can try to master, Escamilla said. It is very difficult. It's always challenging. It's always pushing you to that next level, both artistically and as an athlete. That's what appealed to me about it. I was able to combine those 2 art forms and be able to really share a story with people when I skate. Getting to see her students do well at last week's championships was an encouraging sign, as Escamilla said the experience from competing in that tournament will be valuable. It was a great experience for them, and the fact that it was at the Allen Events Center, which is a pretty big stadium, Escamilla said. You have the hard practices, and to be able to skate cleanly and have that sense of accomplishment. I was very proud of them and the fact that they have experience at that level. Their next competition will be December 4th through 6th at Ice at the Park in Arlington. Looking ahead to their next tournament, Escamilla says the competition in Arlington will be tougher. It's going to challenge our girls a little bit more, she said. They're going to have to train a little bit harder. I'm looking forward to it, and it'll give them a new opportunity and a new skill set. It's going to push them, and that's good. Hopefully they'll come away with another win. That's always the goal.
Hi. This is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. Education section. TED speaker advises parents on how to raise an adult by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstmp.com. Trinity School hosted members from the Midland community Friday at the Midland Country Club for the Sweetie and Hal Clay Peck speaker series featuring author Julie Lithcott Hames, who talked about her book, How to Raise an Adult. The series memorializes the Pecks, who helped define the history of West Texas, said Shelby Hammer, head of school. Hal Clay was an independent oil man, and Sweetie was a civic leader. Their only daughter, Patty Peck Wood, and her late husband, Danny Wood, endowed the speaker series at Trinity to provide parents and students, as well as the wider community, the opportunity to learn more about positively influencing youth. Lithcott Hames is an author, TED speaker, CBS This Morning contributor, and former dean at Stanford University. She talked to the group via Zoom after the speaking arrangement was rescheduled from April because of the pandemic. Representatives from Midland ISD, University of Texas Permian Basin, Bynum School, Midland Classical Academy, Trinity, and Hillcrest School were in attendance. During her talk, Lithcott-Hames focused on how helicopter parenting styles are harming students and young adults once they leave their parents' homes, which is the focus of her New York Times best-selling parenting book. I'm going to talk with you about what I saw on my campus when I was a dean at Stanford, working with college students in terms of over-parenting. I'm going to tell you a few personal stories about my own over-parenting. Then I'm going to tell you how over-parenting is problematic and why we need to do things differently and how we can. During Lithcott-Hames' time as a dean of first-year students at Stanford, she said when students would ask her what they should do for their future, she said she didn't know the answer and wouldn't tell anyone how to live their life. Instead, she would ask students questions that would help them better understand themselves. I would try to open their own minds to their own values and their own dreams. In my conversations with students over the course of 10 years, I grew more and more concerned about them. These students were more and more accomplished with higher GPAs and higher test scores. We have been hard at work trying to perfect our children to get into places like Stanford. Lithcott-Hames said she found herself asking the students if anything on their resumes was their actual passion, or is passion something everyone has told them they needed to figure out before they apply to college. There are three types of overparenting styles that Lithcott-Hames said she witnessed on the campus in the early 2000s. An overprotective parent who says, the world is scary, unsafe, and unpredictable. Therefore, the parent needs to know where the child is at all times in order to know the child is safe. What the parent is missing is that they need to teach their kid how to be smart, strong, and safe out in this unpredictable world. An overdirective parent is the second type of mentality of it's their way or the highway. The parent is like, I'm in charge of this kid's life. I implicitly condition my love for you on whether you achieve my desires for your life. I know a lot of students who were pre-med because they had to be because their parents were making them be. The third type is the hand holder, who is still holding their kids' hands well beyond age 3 and 4 into the teen years and college years. We're still holding their hands like they were an A-list celebrity, she said. We have to have that clipboard over just keeping track of their stations and their deadlines. We bring them anything they forgot. We drop everything if they left their equipment at home. A parent can be a combination of types as well, she said. She said she is also part of all three types when it comes to parenting her own two children. Parents with the best of intentions are harming their children by not letting the children learn from consequences. When we never let those consequences happen, they never learn how to deal with the bad things that do happen, she said. With our best intentions, we end up removing from under them the two things that would make them strong in life, agency and resilience. The lack of agency and resilience leads to higher rates of anxiety and higher rates of depression. Her overarching message was, successful parents put themselves out of the job of being a parent. Our job as parents is to put ourselves out of a job, she said. We have succeeded when we've raised our offspring to be independent. Therefore, how are we going to make that happen? How are we going to teach them instead of doing things for them? Want to know more? Visit JULIELYTHCOTTHAIMS.com or Julie Lithcott-Hames' book, Your Turn, How to Be an Adult, is due out in April. Holy Cross Catholic High School Instruction Tailored to Meet Students Where They Are by Carolyn Gonzalez. Who is Holy Cross Catholic High School and are they finally open is a question I still get 2 years into being an accredited private high school. We are a proud group of parents, students, educators, and community stakeholders who have joined together to create a first-rate academic institution that forms students academically as well as in the Christian faith. Our student body is made up of a small group of sophomores and juniors who began with us last year and have decided to stick with us in spite of the inconveniences and challenges all schools are experiencing because of the pandemic. We were excited to welcome in a new group of freshmen and are looking forward to having our first senior class graduate next school year. But who are we? We are a private high school in the Catholic tradition that is one of a great many options for students in our area. We welcome everyone who has a desire for a faith-based education. We are a community of leaders dedicated to building generations of young people so that they will give back to West Texas through leadership and Christian charity. We are an early college high school where every student will graduate with an associate degree. We have budding partnerships with Odessa and Midland colleges to offer dual credit courses that set students ahead of their college or career journey. All students are issued a laptop for a one-device-to-one-student learning experience. This allows us to be nimble in how we offer instruction. When there have been disruptions, like a snow day or a shutdown because of COVID-19, we have been able to immediately transition our instructional style with fabulous results. We measure our success in the amount of academic growth each student makes during their time with us. It doesn't matter where a student starts as much as how they finish. Our class sizes will always remain small, and our instruction is innovative and tailored to meet the students where they are. Our student body reflects the body of Christ. All colors, faiths, and economic backgrounds are welcome. Because of our tuition assistance program, we have avoided turning away any child or family because of finances. Who is Holy Cross Catholic High School? We are unapologetically Catholic, but welcoming to all. We, just like the people of the Permian Basin, strive each day to embody the idea that God is in control and we are called to continue His work. We are crusaders. As the board's motto states, Ave Crux, Spes Unica. Hail the cross, our only hope. Carolyn Gonzalez is head of school at Holy Cross Catholic High School. Midland College Profiles by Rebecca Bell. City of Fort Stockton employee continues education. Most 33-year-olds can't say they've had the same employer for 15 years. However, Crystal Lopez can. She has worked for the City of Fort Stockton since she was 17 and a senior at Fort Stockton High School. Lopez has maintained the full-time employment with the city since 2005 and received various promotions while also raising a family and obtaining an associate degree from Midland College. "I was fortunate to start my career early in life," Lopez said. "My first job at the City of Fort Stockton was as a utilities clerk. For the past 13 years, I've been working in the CVB, Convention and Visitors Bureau, and have been director of the CVB for 7 years. As director of the Fort Stockton CVB, Lopez oversees public relations and marketing for tourism in Fort Stockton. She supervises 4 employees, an assistant, and 3-person maintenance team that is responsible for maintaining the visitor center and historic downtown area. She will also be involved in the planning of Fort Stockton's new convention event center. Lopez graduated from Midland College in 2011 with an Associate of Applied Science degree in Business Administration. She was able to take all her classes at the Williams Regional Technical Training Center, Midland College's branch campus in Fort Stockton. "I'm not sure if obtaining a degree would have been possible had it not been for the WRTTC. It was convenient and accommodating, which was especially important for me as a working mother." Crystal and Isaiah Granado have 3 children, a 16-year-old daughter, and 2 sons, ages 11 and 4. Granado owns the Autobahn Auto Detailing and Service Shop in Fort Stockton. Lopez has found time to continue her education. "I've been visiting with Andres Madrid and discussing options for pursuing a bachelor's degree. Soon I will begin taking classes toward a bachelor's degree in organizational management from Midland College. Most of the classes for the organizational management program are online, so Lopez said she will be able to take classes in the evenings and on weekends. There's no reason why I shouldn't keep striving to better myself. Also, I want to set an example for my children. I want them to know that education is important and the key to having a good life. We are so lucky that we have a Midland College campus in Pecos County. Scholarships are available through the Scholars Dollars program, and the classes are small, so the instructors are able to answer questions and give help when needed. If you live in Fort Stockton, there are no excuses not to pursue higher education.
Hello, this is Michael, starting with the first article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram front page, Friday, October 23rd, 2020.
This article is entitled, Exxon CEO Announces Layoffs, Defends Fossil Fuels, by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. ExxonMobil plans to lay off an unspecified number of employees as low oil prices force the company to delay major projects, Chief Executive Officer Darren Woods said in an email to staff. Woods also mounted an extensive defense of fossil fuels, calling them a, quote, higher purpose, unquote, that aids global prosperity at a time when European peers are looking at renewables as the future. These are difficult times, Woods said in the message, the text of which was released by the company Wednesday. We are making tough decisions, some of which will result in friends and colleagues leaving the company. The oil behemoth's job cuts are just the latest sign of the struggle among U.S. energy producers navigating the industry's worst downturn in recent memory. This week, two high-profile mergers were announced as explorers seek to gain scale and cut costs to survive the devastating impact of COVID-19 on global demand for fuel. Many have succumbed to bankruptcy. Exxon stock has plunged 52% this year, and the company all but ended its aggressive $30 billion a year countercyclical growth strategy. The company was forced to slash its capital spending budget by a third, or $10 billion, after crude dropped to the lowest in a generation. Rivals such as BP and Chevron have also announced large layoffs in recent weeks. Our plan is to continue to stage project execution and spending, Woods said. Making the organization more efficient and more nimble will reduce the number of required positions and, unfortunately, reduce the number of people we need. But Woods was clear that cutbacks are not a sign that his faith in oil and gas is in any way diminished. Fossil fuels will remain about half of the global energy mix by 2040 and often provide the most cost-effective pathway to development in poor countries, especially those in Africa and Asia, Woods said. We often talk of companies having a higher purpose, he said. Well, I can think of no higher purpose than helping people and communities around the world grow in prosperity and achieve their aspirations for a better life through affordable energy. Most of Europe's large energy companies have adopted aggressive targets to become carbon neutral by mid-century, in part involving big investment in wind, solar, and battery storage. Exxon, under Woods, won't be taking this course. Renewables on their own are not enough to solve climate change, according to Exxon, which claims to be focusing on novel technologies in partnerships with universities and startup businesses. Today's alternatives don't consistently offer the energy density, scale, transportability, and availability, and most importantly, the affordability required to be widely accepted, he said. The stance appears to be at odds with a growing trend this year. Just last month, China pledged to be carbon neutral by 2060, a shift that would set in motion a drop in oil and gas consumption, according to government-affiliated researchers. The EU is aiming to reach neutrality across all greenhouse gases by 2050. California announced a new plan to end the sale of gasoline-powered cars by 2035. Significant investments are needed by oil and gas companies such as Exxon to meet projected long-term consumption, Wood said. This is a compelling investment case for the industry and our company, and is foundational to our long-term strategies and plans. This article is entitled, Service Companies Finding Stability, by Aaron Douglas and Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. Oilfield services company Halliburton reported earlier this week that it lost $17 million in the third quarter after posting a $1.7 billion loss 3 months ago. Oilfield services giants trimmed massive losses in the third quarter as the oil industry begins to stabilize and the deep cost-cutting of recent months proves beneficial to bottom lines. Halliburton, Schlumberger, and Baker Hughes, the sector's three largest companies, saw losses shrink in the third quarter as drilling activity, which ground to a halt 6 months ago amid the coronavirus pandemic, slowly ticks up in the nation's oil patches. It's a welcome sign for the sector, which has been battered by production cutbacks in the oil patch after the coronavirus pandemic slashed demand for crude and a global oil glut sent oil prices to historic lows in the spring. Unfortunately, what happens in this crisis is the service companies take the brunt of it, said Rene Santos, S&P Global Platts analyst. To get back to where they were in March before COVID, it's going to take a couple of years. But if the sector is finding stability, oilfield service companies cut thousands of jobs and slashed spending in recent months. In the Houston area alone, since the end of 2019, the oilfield services and manufacturing sector has shed 17,000 jobs, about 25% of the sector's workforce in the region, according to an analysis by economist Patrick Jankowski of the Greater Houston Partnership. It does include harsh realities, these cost-cutting measures, but at the same time, it is making their companies much more sustainable, said Binny Baga, a senior analyst for Rystad Energy, a Norwegian energy research firm. It's helping in their survival. Oilfield service companies have been particularly challenged as oil production work evaporated during the downturn, forcing them to slash planned spending and jobs. Schlumberger, the world's largest oilfield services company, has closed 150 North American facilities this year, cut wages, and laid off more than 21,000 workers to weather the oil bust. The company on Friday said it is on track to cut nearly $1.5 billion from its business this year. To a large extent, most of the big companies, they have already taken big steps in the last few months to cut costs, Rystad's Baga said. What we are seeing right now is the benefits of those. CEO optimistic. Schlumberger lost $82 million in the third quarter, 3 months after it posted a $3.4 billion second quarter loss, and a year after it lost $11.4 billion in the third quarter of 2019. CEO Olivier Lepuch said Friday that he believes the oil and gas industry will begin to recover during the next two quarters. Analysts concurred, pointing to a slow, steady increase in the number of operating oil and gas rigs in the U.S. and stable crude prices around $40 a barrel. The number of rigs has risen for five straight weeks to 282, but is still down more than 60% compared with the same week last year. Other oil field service executives also say the third quarter marked a turning point. Baker Hughes CEO Lorenzo Simonelli said in a statement that oil markets have, quote, somewhat stabilized, unquote. London and Houston-based Baker Hughes lost $171 million in the third quarter, compared with a second quarter loss of $195 million and a $57 million profit in the period a year earlier. Houston-based Halliburton also trimmed losses in the third quarter, reporting this week it lost $17 million, 3 months after it posted a $1.7 billion loss amid large write-downs of assets. The company made $295 million in the third quarter of 2019. Recovery still fragile. Despite the improved third quarter results, the rebound for oil field services companies will be slow, analysts say. If crude prices continue to linger around $40 a barrel, most exploration and production companies will likely focus on completing oil wells that have already been drilled, said S&P Global Platts Santos. Completing oil wells has benefited oilfield services companies such as Schlumberger, which reported an uptick in those jobs in Texas during the third quarter. But that work alone isn't likely to propel services companies anywhere close to where they were before the oil field collapse. That's because pressure on exploration and production companies to cut costs means they won't need as many new wells drilled. And for completions, they'll be looking to pay service companies less, Santos said. When activity is low, these service companies have to sacrifice higher charges, he said. So we will see some deflation in drilling costs. A full recovery will also be hampered by the ongoing pandemic, which could keep global oil demand below pre-pandemic levels at least until 2023, according to the International Energy Agency. The pandemic itself remains a wild card, Schlumberger's Lepuch said. While the global lockdowns are evolving and vaccine development is progressing, the near-term recovery remains fragile, he wrote. Subsequent waves of COVID-19 could pose a significant risk.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Vitamins as COVID-19 prophylaxis. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 82-year-old overweight male. As a prophylaxis for COVID-19, I am taking 500 milligrams of quercetin, 30 milligrams of zinc, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and 25 micrograms of vitamin D3 daily. What are your thoughts on this regimen, AW? The evidence that this regimen is effective at preventing COVID-19 infections is minimal at the time of this writing, although there are theoretical reasons why one or more may be helpful, and there are observational data showing that low vitamin D seems to be a risk factor for more severe disease. None of these supplements is likely to be harmful at the doses you are taking, but I think they are largely a waste of money. I would also caution you to be very careful thinking that by taking these supplements, you will be protected. You almost certainly aren't highly protected, and being overweight is a risk factor for more severe disease. You should be particularly careful about physical distancing and mask wearing.
New retiree encourages others to find hobbies and save money. Dear Abby, for Friday, November 6th. Dear Abby, I retired a year ago from a stressful job because I couldn't take what it was doing to my health. Despite a divorce after a 35-year marriage 10 years ago, I had recovered financially. I was lucky to have landed a job in my early 30s that had an employer-sponsored 401k plan, and I contributed to it for 34 years, putting in as much as I could. I am now able to collect enough Social Security and withdraw a small amount from the 401k to live as I did when I worked. I always had hobbies, interests, and things I wanted to do but never had time for. I have been very happy and busy ever since. During the quarantine, getting groceries was a bit of a challenge, but I lived simply and had no problems. I am shocked at all the furloughed people who are having fits and complaining that they are bored out of their minds. This should be a wake-up call that they need to get a life. For these people, retirement is going to be really hard. Also, they need to plan for the future and have a 6 to 12 month emergency fund. I have put old home movies on DVDs, reorganized photo albums, cleared out a lot of stuff to simplify my life, put in a vegetable garden, made a quilt. COVID or not, I am a busy woman. Can you encourage all those bored people to learn a new craft, try a new recipe, make a birdhouse? Something other than call this busy woman and distract me from my projects. Living it up in New Hampshire. Dear Living, no, but you should certainly consider doing it. You can make yourself less available to the complainers by putting your phone on mute during the hours you prefer not to be disturbed. This is not to say your suggestions aren't good ones, just that I've urged readers for years to prepare well in advance for retirement and discuss with your spouse, if they have one, how the realities of daily living will change when it comes to chores and conserving personal space. Dear Abby, a man has been reaching out to me on social media for 3 years. He claims to be in love with me, after having met me once briefly, and I think I believe him. It's hard to explain, but I think I may feel the same way toward him. The problem is, I have ignored him for the last 3 years. I blocked him on all social media, but he keeps finding ways to contact me. He even had flowers delivered to my house. To tell the truth, I ghosted him because I'm afraid of what our love at first sight connection could mean. I have been hurt in the past, and I know a relationship of this magnitude could destroy me emotionally. I feel terrible for ignoring him, but my friends and family insist that he is a stalker, and they would never understand if I decided to pursue a relationship with him. I feel paralyzed. What should I do? Confused out east. Dear Confused, if a relationship of this magnitude could destroy you emotionally, then I do not recommend pursuing it. Sane individuals who have been ignored for 3 years usually take the hint and walk away. Listen to your family. What this man has been doing is, to say the least, unusual, and could indeed be considered stalking. Jacqueline Begar Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Begar Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Scorpio and a moon in Cancer. Happy birthday for Friday, November 6, 2020. Stimulating, rousing, and positive, you get the blood flowing for many. In terms of a project you love, you must not get depressed by its first rejection, but try again, for it succeeds very well. Your humor helps it. If single, be open to changes, because a partnership evolves. If attached, more romantic bliss and happiness are to come. Your partner has a surprise for you. Capricorn gives the best gifts. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th. 4 stars. Today generates mood swings in a loved one. Offer words of encouragement. Be a good listener. A visitor offers to help with chores or repairs. A household gathering is peppered with lively discussions. Tonight, ideas and stories that family shares will inspire you. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 4 stars. Today indicates that you might look for a new vehicle or consider alternative travel and transportation arrangements. Mobility issues will be resolved satisfactorily. Hesitate if an acquaintance suggests a risky proposal. Tonight, if something doesn't feel right to you, back off. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th. 2 stars. Double-check suggestions that others make regarding finances. Today's opposition could allow the actions taken by another to drain your resources. Trust your own judgment, particularly if something sounds too good to be true. Tonight, deep disappointment in a loved one. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd. 5 stars. Today generates enthusiasm and motivation. Control impatience and anger, though. It is especially important to be constructive in your focus. Both love prospects and finances are very promising. A desirable relationship grows. Tonight, extra hours of sleep to catch up. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 4 stars. Old and poignant memories surface. Past life regression might be useful to aid in understanding and accepting a present situation. A deep rapport with wild creatures and the spirit of wilderness prevails. Tonight, talk deeply with a mentor from your past. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 5 stars. Friends include you in their plans. The expectations of others draw you into group activities or a prominent role within an organization. You might assume the role of mediator or overseer. Tonight, a light illuminates the future of an important relationship. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 5 stars. Today puts a positive spin on your status and career situation. You'll be highly visible. A Zoom meeting goes especially well. Others express admiration and see you as a role model. Burn sage to cleanse your workplace. Tonight, excitement builds about your future. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 5 stars. Today reveals new potentials on the horizon. Your luck is changing for the better. Select goals for the long-range future. Write a wish list. Information and new ideas are directed your way. Opportunities are likely to come about. Tonight, the world is your oyster. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. 4 stars. Today will be memorable. Be receptive to growth and change. Don't be surprised by the magnitude of changes brewing. It's a time of turning points. There can be a debate or some points of controversy to settle. Tonight, a partner needs convincing. Capricorn, December 22nd through July 19th. 5 stars. Listen carefully and honor others' freedom of thought, even if you disagree. A long-standing partnership in business or in love might be ending or a new one beginning. Your imagination and creativity are excellent. Tonight, an original idea solves a problem, and it's profitable. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 4 stars. Today affects your health sector. A dream or intuitive perception brings insight into fitness factors. Seek ways to ease a stressful daily schedule. A much-loved animal companion might require extra love and attention. Tonight, eliminate clutter and begin spring cleaning early. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 5 stars. Today gives you renewed energy and enthusiasm. You'll enjoy sports, creative projects, and hobbies. Love and admiration come your way. Children have much to share. Young people are sources of inspiration, pride, and hope. Tonight, a relationship becomes more supportive. Born today, director Mike Nichols, 1931. Actress Sally Field, 1946. Writer Michael Cunningham, 1952.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.